Good afternoon. Please be seated. This is Percival et al. Versus District Court. This is a writ proceeding at 68063. If plaintiff for the petitioners is ready, and please state your name for the record if you wish to reserve any time.
Yes, Your Honor. If I could approach the...
Your Honor, Dale Clevin, bar number 7778 for the appellants. Let me just grab my key. Your Honor, I would like to reserve some time for the reply. Your Honor, this is a writ of mandamus and prohibition from the 8th Judicial District Court, and it stems from an action, cause of action, or actually an action that was brought in Clark County, Nevada, with regard to 22 pieces of real property that are located in San Bernardino, California. Before this action was filed, there was a quiet title action filed with regard to these 22 pieces of property some years ago in San Bernardino, California, and title was quieted back then. I believe it was 2004 or so, and then sometime about 6 months before this action was filed, another quiet title action was filed in San Bernardino, California, with regard to the exact same 22 pieces of mining property in San Bernardino, California. After the action was proceeding in San Bernardino with the court exercising jurisdiction there, the plaintiffs in this matter filed an action in Clark County in Nevada, and the idea or the jurisdiction that they were banking on is the fact that two of the corporate entities that were formed by some of the defendants were Nevada corporations. All of the other individuals, persons, and corporations that were involved were had nothing to do with Nevada, were mostly California residents. The contracts were in California, the parties in California. But they proceeded to file the action. One of the defendants filed a motion to dismiss at the very beginning, claiming that there's no subject matter jurisdiction and that Nevada does not have the authority to exercise jurisdiction over property in San Bernardino, California. That matter, the motion was dismissed or denied, and the case proceeded. Some of the defendants, most of the defendants, in fact, all except for William Percival, there was a default granted against them, and default judgment was granted. At right about that time is when I was hired and came into the case. The default judgment was against quiet title. In fact, all of the causes of action stem from the plaintiff's interest in these 22 pieces of property in San Bernardino, California, and the money that they think they would have gotten from these mining claims, et cetera. It's all, when you look at the complaint, it outlines that. In fact, every single cause of action ends with the request that the court transfer and disgorge interest in the property and give it to the defendants. So when the default judgment was entered, the court granted default judgment on all of the causes of action, including the quiet title cause of action, even though William Percival was still litigating the case and still had a claim for quiet title. This was brought up to the court, and several times the motions were brought with regard to prior exclusive jurisdiction, the fact that Nevada currently had a case ongoing regarding ownership and title to these exact same pieces of property filed by the exact same, not the exact same parties, different plaintiff but same defendants. And the action in California mentioned the parties here, the plaintiffs here, but they weren't brought in, and the action here mentioned the plaintiffs in California, but they weren't brought into this one. So motions were filed, again, regarding a motion to reconsider that motion to dismiss and for a failure to name an indispensable party. Those were all denied, and the court said that it had jurisdiction over the subject matter, and the court could enter orders, and the court did transfer title to the property and granted quiet title and issued title by the clerk of the court actually signing, transferring title of these 22 mining claims to the defendants. So we brought this writ to the court to point out, or hopefully have this court point out, that the law is very clear that in an in rem case and or quasi in rem, which this action is, that the one state cannot exercise subject matter jurisdiction over real property, the res of another state, and cannot directly transfer title to that property. That's one of the issues that I think the court, we're asking the court to address. The second one is the fact that the Nevada court exercised the jurisdiction while there was a pending action in California. So we believe that there's exclusive jurisdiction, or the prior exclusive jurisdiction of California would have barred this court proceeding, even if it possibly did have some sort of a jurisdictional right to do so. And then the last issue is
that... Was that California case terminated at the time the Nevada action was brought, or was it still active?
It was still active. They were parallel for a while. Not too long, I believe, the timeline is outlined in the brief, but not too long after the action was filed here, maybe a few months later, a motion to dismiss or demur action motion was filed, and the case was dismissed in California by the court for the plaintiff failing to bring indispensable parties, I believe. Mm-hmm. I wasn't involved in that litigation. I know that there was parallel actions going on, and this was brought up to the district court here.
Has there been any proceeding filed in California after the court entered its judgment in Nevada seek full faith and credit enforcement of the Nevada judgment, or is it just sitting there at the moment?
It's my understanding, possibly, and the plaintiffs or respondents can probably better address that, whether they have. We haven't filed any action, but I believe Quiet Title, the titles actually went down there, and I don't know if any sort of action was filed with regard to those quiet titles, but there was nothing filed bar or estoppel or something like that with regard to the action in California.
The reason I ask is I understand your argument that if the Nevada court enters an order pertaining to California real property and the Nevada order is recorded in San Bernardino County, California, it probably doesn't mean anything because it's not issued by a Superior Court judge in California, which would be done through enforcement of the Nevada proceeding or a California order. So I don't know. I'll be just interested in the comments of both counsel on that.
Yeah, and that's something that, again, I'm not licensed in California, and I've talked to my clients with regard to possibly filing an action addressing the validity or whether those titles are void in California, having a California court address that. But I haven't done that specifically or hired counsel to do so.
About the complaint here being in rem. They assert in their basic complaint breach of contract, fraud, things of that nature. Even though it's tied back to the real property, it deals with the real property, but it's not necessarily a quiet title action. It's a species of it, but it's not per se grounded in pure quiet title. Why should we consider that a pure quiet title action so as to grant this writ? Why is writ even appropriate?
Well, an action doesn't have to be only for quiet title. It can be in rem or quasi in rem. And there's I've cited in the writ, and actually this court recently has decided the Chapman case. And what the court looks at, what this court looked at in those in several of the cases that we've cited, is that even though an action has other causes of action associated with it, like breach of contract or money damages or that sort of thing, that if the foundation of the case, the heart of the case itself, the gravamen is what the language says, of the case itself is...
Doesn't Nevada, though, if it has jurisdiction over the parties, can it compel parties to transfer property?
Only to the extent that...
It's not quiet and title, it's just the transference. And as Justice Gibbons was talking about, then you have a full faith and credit issue that may come down. And I guess the real government of my concern is you're asking the court to enter a writ. So pursuant to law, dead on, the district court had to be wrong. So why should we entertain this writ?
Well, again, for the both of those questions, the first one I didn't really get to finish fully, which is that in the Chapman case, this court has said that even if it's other actions along with the quiet title, the property issues, the whole case is considered in rem or quasi in rem. Secondly, every single cause of action addresses these properties and asks for a quiet title and transfer title as the remedy. And thirdly, with regard to your question of whether or not this court can indirectly transfer title, which the respondent pointed out that there's the I don't know how to pronounce it, the Boss case, which says that Nevada courts can transfer title indirectly, and we don't dispute that, except that two caveats. One, it's indirect transfer of title. Here we have direct transfer of title, where the court actually signed quiet titles directing transfer of ownership. Number two, the court said specifically a court of equity has the authority to act upon persons and order them to do it. This is not a court of equity doing this. This isn't a family court, and it's not a bankruptcy court or some other court of equity. Probate court does it sometimes, where the courts will possibly order people to do property where they have property in different states. This is not a divorce case. There are no cases that we found, and obviously no cases that the respondents found, that addressed and found where title could be directly ordered or even indirectly outside of a divorce action. I found nothing. So this is not a court of equity. This is a court of law that is transferring a title to property. I don't think the court can even indirectly do it, because it says a court of equity has the authority to act upon persons and may indirectly transfer title, and that's in the Boss decision. And I would, if there's other questions, I would like to, my yellow light has flashed. Would you like me to answer any more questions before I?
You still have the 4 minutes left.
Yeah. Let's reserve. I'd like to reserve the time if there's no more other questions at this
That'd
point.
That'd be fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And counsel, I guess the opposite question is, why should we not grant his writ in light of what he has put forth to this court?
A few of the major details were left out of that description of what actually occurred. The title to the property originally was a deal between the plaintiffs and the defendants, where the plaintiffs would fund the operations and the defendants would obtain the property and represented that they would make it income-bearing property. It was all done in California with a California corporation holding the claims. After some years went by and more money was invested, they transferred the titles, the defendants, the appellants today, transferred the titles to all 22 claims to Nevada corporations and played a shell game of transferring them to one, then another, and finally to three corporation souls, which were religious entities, naming as alum owners William Douglas and Philip Percival. They had those companies as churches, with them as alum owners, thereby insulating those properties from the plaintiffs whose investments they held, informing the plaintiffs that the investments were gone, and that a ledger, which finally came after years of asking, showed that the money was all dispersed for consultation fees to themselves, payments to themselves, payments of their personal bills. Therefore, we filed the fraudulent transfer cause of action to show that they fraudulently hid the properties in three churches so that the plaintiffs couldn't get at them. It was also a breach of the contract between them as to what each person's obligations and duties were. Keep in mind, they invested none of their own money or capital into this project. So when the plaintiffs finally found out that they were in three Nevada corporation souls, they came to me, and I asked the judge to assist us in reversing the bad acts of the appellants in this case, which was insulating the claims and taking them away from the plaintiffs. Now, Philip is the active litigant in this case and not William. So counsel misspoke on that, but it's Philip that remains as a plaintiff in the case, or a defendant.
Mr. Percival lives in Nevada?
Mr. Percival, I believe, lives in California. However, as the one who was claiming to be the accountant who looted all the money for the personal expenses, we asked to have him brought in personally, also as the alimony of a church.
So you brought him in, personal jurisdiction, did he commit a tort in Nevada? Was that your theory? That's how you had personal jurisdiction?
That's correct,
jurisdiction?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the concern is the jurisdictional statement and the basic complaint as to Phil Percival indicates an individual is a resident of the state of California with an address of Grand Avenue, Webster, California. It doesn't assert the other things you're asserting, which kind of gives the court some pause. The other folks, you've at least alleged some kind of contact with Nevada through the corporations and so on. I guess one of the other issues that were raised, even if we find that the other entities, the court was correct in defaulting them, why should the court have been allowed to transfer all this other interest in these other properties without the accusations against Mr. Percival?
Mr. Percival asserted absolutely no interest, personal interest, in the mining claims at all, and nor did he prove any. And he produced zero documents pursuant to 16.1 and zero documents pursuant to a request for production of documents asking him to show any interest he actually had in the properties. He claims to have a sweat interest in the properties. However, he took $750 a month of the plaintiff's money for that sweat interest in the properties. There's no contract that says he has an interest in the actual mining claims. And if there is one, he didn't produce it.
In this particular matter, it's my understanding that after the court denied the motion, in essence, to reconsideration to set aside the various defaults, there was a prove-up hearing?
Yes, sir, there was. It happened. The prove-up hearing happened directly after the motion to set aside the judgment and to dismiss was heard. So,
did anyone appear, any defendants appear, or any lawyer on their behalf to say, I have an interest that should not be transferred? Or?
That is correct. All of the defendants personally were there in court with their counsel at the motion to set aside. When they lost that motion, they were informed that they could stay and make any statement they might have during a default hearing. However, they all left the room, and the default hearing went forth without them.
Was there any request to continue the default?
There was not.
The prove-up, so to speak?
There was request to try again on the motion to set aside, but not to reset the default. There was no such request.
Is it your position that they made a general appearance before the Nevada court? Or did they reserve, were they just challenging the jurisdiction of the Nevada courts, these people, when they showed up? I mean, I'm not sure what happened. It's kind of a bizarre fact pattern here. But
that's correct. I'm not sure quite what the question is, but what happened at the, is they, I didn't bring the petition for a default judgment until 11 months after. And I had a complaint, and 11 months, and during that time, Philip Percival showed up purporting to represent all the parties, including the corporate entities, for a motion to dismiss. And he was informed by me, by counsel, or by Judge Herndon, and also by me at the 16.1 hearing, that he would have to hire counsel to represent the corporate entities. So he was aware of it, and we talked on the phone further about it. They did not do so until after the petition for default judgment was filed with the court. Then, pending that hearing, the motion to set aside was filed, and it was denied based on them being culpable in not answering, in willfully not answering, and not submitting to the jurisdiction of Nevada on the corporations that they set up in Nevada to hold the claims.
So is it your position that they entered a general appearance with this motion and submitted to Nevada jurisdiction, or they were still contesting Nevada's personal jurisdiction over them?
It seems to me they were still contesting Nevada's jurisdiction and do to this day.
Okay. Now, have you, has your client taken any, done anything with the Nevada judgment that he's received to seek to enforce it in California?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, California counsel Scott Cantor is here today. He's handling the domestication with the California court of our judgment. The holdup is the California court doesn't want to do it until Philip is finally resolved and the whole case has been completed. But Philip remains as an active litigant, so basically it's delayed until we can resolve the issues with Philip, which are simply monetary. Does he owe money back? He's produced, or is he going to be jointly and severally liable for the judgment action on the money that was taken and converted for personal use? He's never shown that he has an interest in the actual property or the claims. So yet they want to wait and see that he...
Because these proceedings are still pending? Is that the...
Correct.
Their position, the California court is saying it's not a final judgment,
correct.
Even though this is a writ and not a direct appeal. You know, it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a textbook of criminal, of civil procedure here. We could do
part of the underlying action because of Phillips. So
right, right.
So, yeah, so both of those reasons, but it is the court in California, to my knowledge, had no other issue with it besides that, no substantive issue, and. When I went down to the BLM office in Sacramento and in Riverside, I discussed, you know, that this was all right with them, that everything, that all the dots were on the I's and the T's crossed. And I met with their counsel in both places and asked to make sure that everything was being done properly as far as the quitclaim titles being restored to their original owners, which were the plaintiffs in the case. And, in fact, I've been getting calls from the BLM office and the Riverside office that the defendants in this matter continue to try to transfer the property to Wyoming corporations and other things. And I got a call from them that said, you know, people are filing fraudulent things in our court. And
we'll rein this back into the record before this court. One of the concerns is counsel's offered arguments that we should entertain his writ because part of the complaint sounds in quiet title. What is your response to those arguments that he made to the court this day?
I asked the court simply to unwind the bad actions of the fraudulent transfers and the fraud. So in order to unwind the bad actions, the bad fraudulent transfers, I asked the court to indirectly divest title from the three churches and give them back to the plaintiffs. Now, in this case, if the defendants had been active, the court could have, under Rule 70, directed them to sign the quitclaims back to the plaintiffs and make it right. However, because they were in default, and they refused to take any direction from the court or submit to any jurisdiction from the court, I asked the court under Rule 70 to ask that the clerk of court sign them in their stead since they refused to participate and were in default. And that's how, so it wasn't a direct quiet title action. It was indirectly unwinding the actions of the fraudulent transfers into the churches.
Okay.
Any additional questions?
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to, I'm sorry, it's just kind of an unusual fact pattern here. So the court certainly can, if there is personal jurisdiction over these defendants, the court can enter a money judgment, the court can enter an injunction, you know, like that. I'm just not sure the court can enter an order transferring title to a for property in another state. That's the part that bothers me. I mean, the California court can do it. You know, like that, but is there anything else you want to say on that particular issue?
Your recent decision of the court in 2015, July 23rd, Mark Anderson versus Sanchez, affirms the court in Buas versus Buas that says that an out-of-state property rights may be passed indirectly in a divorce court when both parties reside in Nevada.
Right. You see, there's personal jurisdiction over all the parties. That's why I kept asking, did we establish personal jurisdiction over everybody?
Well, at least the corporate entities certainly were all established in Nevada as a part of...
So you have jurisdiction over the corporation. If they're Nevada corporations,
and they had 100%.
You can sue in Nevada. That's easy.
And they had
how about the individuals, though, like that? Well, like Mr. Percival, he lives in California. He's not a Nevada resident, so you can acquire personal jurisdiction. You're serving him in Nevada, then you have personal jurisdiction. Or serving him outside of Nevada, but alleging he committed a tort of, you know, the long-arm way of getting personal jurisdiction over him. So you feel you've established that with the court.
Yes, sir. I actually made that argument early on in the case because Philip Percival was one of the alimonies of one of the churches, and also he's one of the actors that was involved with making the fraudulent transfers to get the benefits of the Nevada state laws over California. So that was why I asked to have William and Philip brought in personally, because they were personally taking the money for their own personal expenses.
One last question. I'm sorry to take a lot of your time, but we're trying to get everything straight to hopefully make the right decision when we talk about it when we're done here. Is in this case, Mr. Percival's filed a writ proceeding here as opposed to a direct appeal. Do you feel it's that he should have pursued the direct appeal route versus the writ, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, if you want my opinion on that, I think we should have waited until Philip was completed and the case was actually completely over, and then bring an appeal if it was still appropriate.
Well, at least we have another way to look at it is that Percival still has his rights pending, but the other parties have now been defaulted. Why shouldn't we entertain it as the parties who have not been defaulted?
Can you ask the question?
Basically, except for the one Percival, all the other parties that were defaulted, why isn't a writ still appropriate as those parties, and then allow the other party to pursue whatever claims, if should they have any, on the direct appeal?
Your Honor, I'm perfectly willing to move to bifurcate the case if it assists in getting a resolution or anything that makes sense in this case.
Right. I mean, we can entertain the writ. You can file a writ on anything, basically.
Right.
The thing is that we generally don't entertain them when the cases are fragmented unless it's some major public policy issue. I mean, we have the discretion to do it. So that's part of the analysis we have to go through is should we consider the writ? And obviously, Mr. Clevin says yes, and you probably say no, and then we can try and come to the right decision then.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Kevin, you have 4:02 anything you'd like to tell us as to
the last 4 minutes
as to why we should do what you're asking us to do this day?
A couple things, unless the court has any direct questions for me, I just want to address a couple things. No?
I mean, about this California proceeding, counsel is saying that Mr. Cantor is working on it. Has your client been served with anything?
I haven't seen anything or been served with anything with regard to that.
So you don't know what's pending in California at the moment?
Yeah, and with regard to whether the court has any concerns about it, I don't know that there's opposing facts presented to the court or argument to the court to raise those concerns.
There's some part of it. I presume, as you indicated, isn't there California counsel, since you said you're not?
I don't know if my client has California counsel. I don't believe that there is, or I probably would have known about it. But I think they may just be proceeding without any opposition down there.
Let me ask it a different way. Are you representing them in California through someone else, perhaps?
No, absolutely not. I'm unfamiliar with the proceedings down there.
Okay.
As far as... a couple things. The prove-up, the defendants were not at the prove-up. The prove-up was done right after my motion where I said there's no jurisdiction from the court, and it was a prove-up that was done ex parte, which is in violation of NRS 40.110, which requires a properly noticed evidentiary hearing before you can transfer title. It's not just a prove-up, ex parte prove-up. It's a separate issue.
That being said, that's not necessarily part of our writ.
I understand.
But the question is, within that question is, before the parties walked out, were they aware that that prove-out was going to be conducted?
I was aware. The parties were not there. I was aware as I was
there. You were representing them at the time.
Correct.
So you or the clients had notice of the intent to proceed with the prove-up then, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and why do you think it's ex parte if you had notice of it?
Well, because they
chose not to participate. You know.
Well, again, a couple things. Number one, I received notice basically there. It was, we're going to proceed now with the prove-up, and it was kind of caught off guard. And secondly, it wasn't as though a proper notice was given where a brief of all the issues was presented. I had an opportunity to respond, and there was a hearing and that sort of thing, and I said, no, we don't want to do it. It was, hey, we're going to prove up, and I was like, I still was trying to get my hands around what was going on with the case at the time. I had just been hired to do a motion to set aside the default.
Okay.
With regard to this action, law clients refusing to participate in this action, and then in California, and then having them in Nevada, and then having them proceeding because my client refused to participate is simply untrue. There was no notice given. And this last thing, and as I'm running out of time here, is the indirect, this is the first time I'm finding it, that they're doing an indirect action or indirect transfer of title. This is a quiet title action. There was no order from the court to say, defendants, you must transfer title. I do a lot of family. There's an order that says you must transfer title. Then when they don't do it, then you do an application for order to show cause, and then there's an order to show cause.
So there was no mandatory injunction issued compelling them to transfer the title?
Correct. In fact, there was no request made by motion that they refused to participate in. That's what I'm saying. There was no refusal to participate in any orders. It was just simply the court granted default judgment. The court then had the clerk of course sign the titles, and the titles were taken down to California. There was no request at all on our part to participate in this.
Mr. Clavin, in the 30-some-odd seconds you have, but giving a little more time, if this court was to consider ruling in your client's favor, how should we write and state that order?
Wow. The very simplest deal is that this is an action that is in rem or quasi in rem pursuant to the Chapman case. That if it is in rem or quasi in rem, then all of the causes of action themselves, again, according to the Chapman case, are part of the whole action itself. You can't separate it out. To that end, this court does not have subject matter jurisdiction because the property that is in dispute, there's no dispute that the property that is litigated, there are 22 pieces of property in California. So that's the heart of the matter. If there's no subject matter jurisdiction, then everything else, whether there's fraud, whether there's misconduct, all that stuff, is irrelevant. That's up to a California court to address the merits. My client denied all that, but of course, Nevada didn't have the jurisdiction to address those issues.
But potentially they had jurisdiction to deal with damages, to issue a mandatory injunction, do all sorts of stuff. I mean, if there's personal jurisdiction, they can do that. But I understand your point. Maybe the quiet title is the one thing they can't do. But it seems to me the judge could have ordered your client to sign the transfer documents on the property. Kind of like a divorce case, you know, like that, if there's personal jurisdiction.
Correct. If this was a court of equity, this is not a court of equity. This is a court of law. This isn't family court. This isn't a divorce action. This is a deal where none of the individuals live in Nevada. They all live outside of Nevada. There's no contracts here in Nevada. There was no performance here in Nevada.
Nevada corporations. We have people who are officers or directors or members of those corporations. Even though they are based in California, they've come to Nevada and availed themselves of certain rights.
I understand. But
so it's not as... I respect your position on behalf of your client, but it's not as quite clean and clear as you're trying to make it that there's no contact with the state that we should not consider.
And again, I'm not bringing a cause. I'm not challenging personal jurisdiction. It's subject matter jurisdiction. Whether the personal jurisdiction is irrelevant, this court does not have subject matter jurisdiction under the Chapman because the whole case is quasi in rem. So even though there's money damages, and Chapman specifically says, even though there's other causes of action that address money damages, if you have at its heart this is an issue of real property, which this one is, then the whole case the court has no jurisdiction to enter any of the issues with regard to this matter. Thank you, Your Honors.
I think we get that. We understand your point. We understand counsel's point.
Mr. Clavin.
Now we got the hard part. We have to finish.
Anything else, Lee?
No. Mr. Clavin and Ms. Ryan, we thank you for the arguments. We will take this matter that you've now given us under consideration and figure out how to solve the problem. With that, thank you. We stand at recess. This case is...